Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B.
Today's guest is Ali Mims, 22 years of volunteer and career experience, a former lieutenant with Augusta Fire Department in Georgia, currently a field training coordinator with Georgia Emergency Management and Homeland Security. Although Ali might not be engaged within the fire service full time, he's still a fire instructor who helps teach RIT and firefighter survival training, a Georgia Flames graduate who loves anything related to truck work. Ali's biggest passion is firefighter fitness and training, and has the mindset that as firefighters, we must have our own why that keeps us mission focused on obtaining the goal. With that, I present Mr. Ali Mims.
My name is Ali Mims, and it's kind of fire service. I actually didn't have nothing else to do, you know. I thought about the military, and that didn't work out. You know, my dad never really spoke about the military, and I always wondered why, because he served in Vietnam. And I think he didn't want me to go that path based off what he saw and he experienced. So the military was never nothing that we talked about in my home. And then even in high school, military never came by, never had a table set up, knew of it, but not like never really knew what that looked like, you know, so that wasn't a path. Thought about going to college, playing basketball, had a letter of intent to the University of Georgia, on contingency that I did pretty good on my SAT. So I screwed that up, didn't do good on the SAT. So still trying to figure out life. And, somebody asked me, say, hey, why don't you be a cop? And I said, a cop? I said, shoot, I done too much wrong in my life to be a cop, so that's not going to work out. So years passed by, still trying to figure out life. And then different person, different questions say, hey, why don't you be a firefighter? And I said, I feel like I could do that. So started volunteering back in 2001, found out that that was kind of my niche, and did it all the way up into 2006, and then got hired full-time at a career department with Augusta Fire Department in 07.
Okay. All right. It's funny how everyone's different pathways, walks of life takes them into the fire service. So with that being said, with today's day and age and how the fire service is trending, in your opinion, what does the term aggressive mean to you?
Oh, man. I think it's a couple of ways I can look at that. You know, we're not actually being in the fire service per se, like at a company or everyday hustle and bustle, but just training and seeing the different mindsets and being around it. I would say looking at that term aggressive as being, even with the term aggressive, I think there's moderation with that. To give you an example. So back when I was a firefighter, what we considered as aggressive, the guys that's going in, no matter what the heat conditions look like, we going in, you know, we trying to put this thing out. But in this day and time, you really can't look at the aggressive like that because construction has changed. A lot of young people in the fire service now, they don't have that same knowledge and experience to be that aggressive. So I think that needs to be analyzed. Like, how are we really looking at aggressive? Like for me, I could say, yeah, let's go in it. Let's go get it. Let's go rock and roll. But aggressive in this culture, it needs to be really defined and looked at, like, how is that really being explained to young firefighters, like what aggressive means, you know, or if you're talking about aggressively being fit, you know, what does that look like? Is it talking about, you know, taking steroids and muscle enhancements or whatever? Is that considered a part of that aggressive, or are you just training to the brink of you throwing up every time you train, you know? So it needs to be defined what, you know, aggressive means, you know, in this day and time.
Okay. Love the answer. Because, I mean, you're right. I mean, back then, you know, it's crazy to see how much building construction has changed, how much furniture has changed. You know, the amount of time you had before flashover to compare to now, man, it's 100% night and day difference.
Yep. I agree.
So you got hired with your career fire department. Was it hard transitioning from volunteer to career, or like, was it eye-opening, or was it everything you expected?
Actually, I was better prepared because when I was a volunteer, I was always reading the book. I was in doggone good shape, you know, because of the volunteer, we didn't get many calls. So all we had time was to work out. So when I got in a career setting, when I went through the recruit class, I was good on PT. I was passing all the tests with 90s. So for me, it was a smooth transition. Even with call, of course, the call volume bumped up, but the fires kind of was the same. Of course, the structure was bigger. We had two stories where I volunteered. We only had trailers. But the transition really wasn't that difficult for me. You know, it really was a smooth transition.
Okay. All right. And I'm assuming, did you try to find yourself to, did you try to find that you surrounded yourself with like-minded individuals, you know, not so-called slugs of the fire service? Like, were you always trying to find the right people to be around?
I was, but I always had this mindset that I got to be able to do me regardless of what I'm around. I think over a period of time, like-minded, we started shifting towards each other, but I never kind of set out for in that we had the like mind, you know, because my crew, I was at a double company and none of them worked out, but I didn't allow that to affect me from working out. You know, I remember one day my cap telling a guy from another company, we was rolling fire hose. And I was always rolled a fire hose with my air pack on, just trying to get acclimated to it. So the guy from another company say, "Man, Mims, take off your air pack." And my captain said, "Nah, leave Mims alone. That's how he train. That's how he stay in shape." So I created a culture of this is what I'm going to do regardless of what you guys do. And I think it allowed others to gravitate towards me. I never really seeked out, you know, individuals for that camaraderie. When it came to, you know, fitness and just, you know, wanting to work hard, we kind of wind up meeting at the crossroads, you know?
Okay. Okay. What advice, because it's not very often you hear individuals with that kind of mindset, because, you know, after a while, if the individual is like that, but they surround themselves or find themselves, you know, after a while, just getting complacent with whatever they're around, what advice would you give to an individual that has to do things by themselves? PT, training, just, you know, trying to stay on top of everything with the fire service.
You know, it's always this thing that's been floating around, and I don't know how long, you know, David Goggins and other motivational speakers speak of it. It's like, you got to figure out what your why is, you know? Once you come up with the why, that's usually what's going to sustain you to be able to work out by yourself. Cause I remember a fire inspector used to always see me in the bay reading a book or working on ropes and knots. We had a good crew, but I always looked at it as like, I gotta be squared away. You know, I can't depend on, you know, somebody to tie this knot for me or somebody to teach me or not teach me, but somebody to get me out of an entanglement. Like I need to figure that out and learn myself. So I think I would pass on is understand what your why is. And most whys could be, at the time for me, I had a 3-year-old daughter, you know, and I need to do the best I can and everything I can think of training wise to get home to her. So I probably would pass that on. Figure out what your why is. If it's your wife, if it's your family, if it's, you know, you want to be able to be around to make your daughter's or son graduation. I think explaining to people to come up with what a why is will motivate them to work out and to read and to just be better all around.
Yeah, love it. Awesome. Next question. In your opinion, should there be a years of service clause for promotion?
Yes, I do. I think because we all know, and you know yourself, brother, we got plenty of people out there that are good test takers. And taking a test, you know, however it's created, doesn't really apply to the, I guess, the application of doing it out in the street. And I got a prime example of that is I had a lieutenant that I knew that hands down, he was the best lieutenant on Augusta Fire Department when it came to firefighting. Like he could walk inside of a hospital and be like, he'll go to smelling. He was like, oh yeah, that's a ballast that's out, you know? So his experience on the street, hand down, was the best, but he couldn't convey that in a classroom setting. Not at all. He's not that guy, you know? He would probably be stuttering. You know, he couldn't figure out how to convey it to you, but teach you in the street and watch that fire roll over, he got it. So I think what the years of service will do for promotion purposes will give that individual time to learn the job, see and experience different things, because it's nothing like doing a mock setup where people are behind a screen and they saying they're giving you all these engine companies and you got to keep track of them. Like, yeah, you might could do that, but it's that much more better if you've really done that on a scene. You've commanded a scene, you've dealt with multiple engines, you know what the lingo is, you know not to get lost by losing this company, you don't forgot what that company doing. So I think those years of experience or years for promotion would allow individuals to get as much experience as they could to be better suited for that position.
Okay. And if you could have it your way, how long would you have the candidate wait before they're allowed to promote? Like from firefighter going up to whatever next level it may be?
I would say 3 years.
3 years. Okay. Okay. And so how long did you wait before you wanted to go to the next step?
You know, for me, and the reason I use 3 years is because that's kind of that's what I knew. Mm-hmm. But for me, it gave me time to get acclimated to the job and learn my position well. At the same time, as a firefighter in the back, I'm watching that sergeant or that engineer. I'm watching him drive. I'm watching when he is in the role. I'm listening to how he's talking on the radio. So I'm learning. Where if I didn't have that time frame, I'm not saying it wouldn't have made me as good as I did when it was time for me to run for promotion. I just wouldn't have had nothing to pull from. You know, the one thing I learned from my captain is that when you got a firefighter, somebody up under you, when you trust them, you trust them. Don't second guess. And it took time for my captain to build that, because when we would search a room, Cap would say, "Hey, Mills, we good?" I say, "We good, Cap." He ain't second guessing it. We moving on to the next room. But that took time. You know, so for me, that's kind of why I stick with that 3 years, because that helped me learn the next position and the same time learning mine as well and getting good at it. So,
Okay. And so you test for the next step and you achieve it. Sitting in that role now, was it everything that you had hoped for, or was it what you expected? Is pretty much what I'm trying to say.
It was. I had to come across management issues, because my best friend and we worked out together, him and my daughter played together. I had a key to this house. He was my driver. And, you know, one day he kept shifting over into the left lane. And, you know, he just was, I'm not going to say drivers recklessly, but he just was shifting a lot. And I had to tell him, I say, "Look, Maddox," I say, "you keep shifting in this right lane. I'm going to have to, you know, discipline you." So I think for me, that was probably one of the challenges, is that when you got a friend that's up under you, and if they're really your friend, they shouldn't put you in that type of situation, you know, where you got to do that. And he didn't. But that was probably one of the toughest things for me to say, "Hey, look, Maddox, come on, man, you got to stop shifting over in that right lane." Because in the city, the roads kind of tilt. So we try to stay out that right lane because it'll pull you over. You wind up hitting the stoplight, or, you know, because the lights stick out, or you hit a stop sign. So we try to stay in that left lane. So I always had to kind of remind him of that. But other than that, the role itself was pretty good. I was pretty prepared for it.
Okay. And I love that you brought that up. So it kind of, I can kind of ask this next question. You hear some individuals that will tell you when you get to a certain rank, you can no longer be that person's friend. Like, it's strictly boss. But yeah. I truly believe there's a balance where you can be buddy, and hopefully, and you stated it earlier, that individual doesn't put you in that position to make you have to pull a boss move.
Right. I agree.
Would you say that you can have that balance of buddy and boss?
Yeah. I've seen it happen. I've seen it work. I actually did it. I didn't have any more problems, you know, with my friend after that, you know, because you got to be able to. And that's why, and the flip side of that is that if you're too buddy buddy, y'all going out together, y'all drinking together, I've seen that side of it. When they come to work and now you try to tell them what to do, it's like they don't want to respect you because y'all was just drinking. And so it is a thin line with that. So I think for me, you can be that person. I think overall, if I had to answer that question, It's just you got to be able to figure out how you're gonna manage that. Like, what is the line cut off when it comes to that outside activity that you do? You know, so I think it can be done. It's just it's a balance. It's definitely a balancing act.
Okay. All right. For promotion to company officer, are you in favor for a simulated computer scenario? You know, when they put you in a room, there's a screen, they show you a house and different sides and all that. Or are you in favor for if your department or organization has a training facility, they use real people, real companies, and they grade you in real time as if you're responding to a structured fire?
That's a good one there, because I think I support both. So I'm going to answer it like this. I think that if your department is financially able to give the real scenario, then that's what they need to go with. If not, in their smaller department, they don't have the means and the simulation and bringing in an assessment center is more feasible, then they should go with that. So I kind of go with both of them, depending on the department financial ability.
Okay. All right. Next topic for you is recruitment and retention. Granted, you're not like 100% in the fire service anymore. You still kind of do things part-time, but
right.
What would you do? What do you see the fire service is doing well on recruitment and retention? And what do you see can the fire service improve on?
I think I'll start with the improvement, because if I ever be a fire chief, this is something that I wouldn't mind doing. I think to improve, we got to get into these schools. And I think it's a vested interest when you get into the schools and you have people from the community. If I know that I hear a call go out and I hear, wait a minute, that's Miss Betty's address. I know that person directly. I got a vested interest because that's somebody I know for the community. So I'm going to work. I'm not saying you're not going to work that much more hard, because a citizen is a citizen, regardless if you know them or not. But I think if we start investing in these schools and trying to get people from the area, it's more of a vested interest of them staying, and you keep that recruit retention. Instead of them jumping around chasing money, they'll actually stay because they're from the area, you know? So I think that's where we can improve, is figure out how we can target the youth that's within the area. You know, we got to come up with some type of, I don't want to use sales pitch, but we got to come up with some type of incentive model, something to make the fire service appealing for the youth that's within the area. You know, and here in Georgia, it was DeKalb County and Gwinnett. Both of them did a recruit video. One of the videos, you can see that they're clearly trying to show diversity. The other, I think DeKalb, when they did their recruit video, it's there, but they don't put it in your face. So we have to figure out their method of recruiting. On one department was, we want to let you know we're diverse. The other one was like, we're not going to put it in your face, but we're going to let you see it through the video. So I think that's a good marketing tool in the metro area of Atlanta of how they do recruitment. But I would say that's probably what we need to improve on. On the flip end, I think what we're doing good, some departments, some agencies, or maybe I have to say as a whole, I think from what I see, what we're doing good is probably making it more appealing with, I guess, putting it out there what all you can do in the reward of being a firefighter.
Okay.
You know, rather than just putting that dollar amount, okay, yeah, this dollar amount, because for some people, $42,000 may be great. For some people, $38,000 may be great. Some people, $26,000, whatever that dollar amount looks like. But let's start putting out, I think what we're doing good is some agencies are allowing to show that you only work 10 days a month. You could possibly have a part-time. You can get tuition reimbursement. Whatever that looks like, I think that's what we're doing as a whole, is we're putting more out there for people to be able to physically see, like, you know, dental benefits. Like, let's put more out there to get them more to buy in than just, hey, look, here's a career we're hiring, here's the dollar pay, come on. Like, I think we're doing better with putting more out there for the people.
Okay. On a personal note for me, I understand in this, which, I mean, it's just, it's different, 2024, different world, different society that we're living in. But I personally do not like the stigma of the diversity that we, you know what I mean? Because to me, I'm sorry, The fire service, most firemen that I know that are great firefighters, chief officers, captains that truly care about the job, we don't care what you look like. We
Right.
just want people to come in, actually care about traditions, doing the job, doing it well. And if you're kick ass and you're kick, whether you're female, it don't
Right.
matter to me. But I hate whenever they start. Like you said, you can see the advertisements and the way it
Yeah.
goes, and it's like, why are we doing it? Like, just to say, hey, look, our quota, we have, like, I don't, most firemen don't care.
At the end of the day, you're right.
We just want good people. That's
Yeah.
it. So,
I agree.
but yeah, I mean, it's just on a side note, I truly think most firefighters that I've talked to, they don't care. They just want you to be good. They want you to
Yeah.
come in, good head on your shoulders, want to train, and that's it.
Yeah, I agree.
Let's go on to let's talk about leadership. That's a good one. For either company officer or chief officer, what is, in your opinion, what is a great leader? What does a leader look like? What do they do? What are they supposed to emulate?
Well, I'm a firm believer is even when I was a lieutenant in training, I think a leader should be able definitely to lead by example, and whatever that looks like. So in training, to me, lead by example, if I'm the training lieutenant or training captain and we're doing PT, my lead by example is if I tell you to do 100 jumping jacks, I'm gonna do 99 of them, and then I'm gonna watch you on that last one. So for me, that encompasses being a leader. In that realm. If you're talking about, just within the normal duties of being a company officer, getting out there and say, hey guys, let's go out here in the bay and, let's practice some ropes and knots. Making the initiative to bring your guys together to do something. I think that's encompass a good leader, lean by example, making the initiative to bring people together. And then I think also, man, is being able to know that you don't know everything. Humble enough to be able to get feedback from your people. That's what makes you a good leader, is being able to listen and, pulling feedback from people. I remember I had a battalion chief that he would listen to a firefighter quick. He would ask, a firefighter say, hey, what you think? Or if a firefighter come back say, hey chief, we got a six story window, we need to ladder it. All right, go ahead. So to me, looking at him and how he had his leadership skills, he didn't allow rank to sway. Oh, I'm not listening to you. You're a firefighter. So that was a great moment for me to learn from my battalion chief that, he let people make decisions, and that's a form of leadership, allowing your people to, not micromanage, allowing them to, do their job. So just to sum that up, what encompasses a good leader for me is being able to lead by example, having the initiative to get your people together, whatever that looks like. Because one thing I learned too, and it speaks about this in the company officer book, people always like to say, oh, the morale down. And I remember, me and my captain talking, and me and Cap was like, we don't care what's going on at administration. Like, we still got to go out and rock and roll, fight fire. So the morale might be down in administration, but our morale good, So we never got caught up in that. And I think people drop the ball with that. It's like, oh man, the morale down. Like, you're your own, leader or person. Why are you allowing the encompass of the department morale to be down, supposedly, to allow your station, your shift, and your people to be, So yeah, we never got caught up in that. So I think that's what encompasses a good leader is being able to lead by example, setting the tone for the initiative for his people, and then allowing his people to do their job, or allow him or her to allowing their people to do their job.
And man, that's facts on the big facts on the morale issue. And I understand every fire department, every organization has their ups and downs, but to let, like you said, some policy or some whatever happening on the administration side seep and bleed into the four walls of your fire station, your company, in which then the company officer's like, guys, I don't really care what y'all do. If y'all want to pencil whip truck checks today, I'm good with it. I never understood that because we're in our own station. Administration is doing their own things. We're answering the calls like, you know, yeah, some rules or whatever policies that are going to come out might you might not agree with, but to let it affect the way you're going to respond and do your daily, like, I just don't get it.
I don't either, brother. I don't either.
It's just, it's crazy. It's really, yeah. But what would you do if you, with you being a lieutenant, what would you do if, you know, you, because you always have one, there's always one person that
Right.
like lay out the bait and go, you know, hey, did you hear what's going on? Blah, blah, blah. Man, that's some bullshit right there. You know, I don't feel like doing anything. They're like, what would you do on that situation?
Well, depending on what they throw out, first I'm gonna address it because I remember me and my chief for Augusta, we were real cool, and he came out with a policy that said you had to pay back a person within the pay period. Before, if I work for you at the swimmer, if we do a time swap, if I work for you in January, shoot, I ain't have to pay you back to, December or whenever. So I got pissed off because I did a lot of twine salutes to go to a fire academy. And I was like, wait a minute, hold on. Why am I allowing this? He's got to do what's best for the whole department. So it took me to sit back and be like, I can't get in my own little box because we cool and be like, wait a minute, chief, man, you affecting me with this policy. It ain't about me. So that person that's trying to, say that, finding out what it is, let's sit and talk about it and then try to explain, like, how is this really affecting you? And then if it's affecting you that much, just think about, like, we got, let's say, for instance, Kentucky. Kentucky got 600 and something personnel. And you that one person that complaining about, like, just think about it like that. So I would try to talk to that person, find out what they're complaining about, and just try to get them to look at it a different perspective. It's bigger than you. I swear it is, So I it still might be a negative Nancy person, but I'll try to at least talk through it and give them some different perspective of how to look at what they're frustrated about,
Okay. All right. Now I totally get it. I get it. I get it. When it comes to training, what is your niche? What is your specialty? What do you love to do?
Man, I'm a stickler for training, man. My specialty probably would be firefighter survival, because I think that's one of the things in the fire service that, we train on, getting people out, using webbing, all that. But I think we're getting better at training on how to getting ourselves out or our own. So that's kind of my niche, and I'm a stickler about that. I see some guys. I remember I was teaching the search and rescue class at the fire academy. And it was a guy from some old small department. And we was talking about different methods of how to get people out and the importance of webbing. Cause I gave him a story of when me, my captain and an officer went in and he never done this before, but dragging somebody out without having any webbing or something to hold on to, man, you just pulling their skin. It makes for a suck drag. Like, and I don't care how strong, how fit you are. That particular drag like that sucks. Their clothes are coming off. So I learned then, I said, I got to figure out what can I use. And then that's when I came across webbing, and, learned about that. So this guy was saying that, well, he'll just go in and just, brute strength. I said, have you ever rescued anybody before? Obviously, he said no. I said, the only time that that brute strength work of snatch and go is when they're about 10, 15 feet.
During our conversation, we had a technical glitch in communication. Technology, right?
You were talking about brute strength and 10 to 15 feet away from the door.
Yeah, so pretty much just to sum up what you asked, and my niche is just making sure that you square it away enough to have some type of plan in the event that you have to save your own. I was giving an example of somebody thinking that, they could just go in and just grab somebody with brute strength, and I was saying that that only is going to work 10, 15 feet in the door. The further back they are, that brute strength is going to run out, so you need to have some webbing or some type of device or some type of maneuver of how you're going to bring somebody out. So that's kind of what I'm a stickler about, is having some type of plan and training on how you're going to get not only the citizens out, but yourself. And then my niche would be like firefighter survival. I'm actually on a firefighter survival committee here in Georgia at this one department. So that's kind of my niche. That's because, I mean, nothing towards the citizens. I mean, grabbing the citizens is usually, that's what we do. What we struggle at is when it's, getting our own, because we got all this gear on, and then it's just, so I want to make sure that people are squared away more on that, Not taking away from the citizens, but I just want to make sure that they got a full understanding of how are you going to save your own, you know?
A couple questions to ask you. Are you an engine guy or a truck guy, or do you not care?
Probably a truck guy.
Truck guy. Okay.
Oh, I got a couple of video on. I'm sorry, brother.
Oh, that's fine. So you're a truck guy. And as far as training, are you in favor for outside training? Like, because I think outside, I think it's good to train with your department, but I think outside training brings a different perspective. You learn different maneuvers, tactics, things that you might not know about because you're used to just one way.
It's funny you say that. I was teaching in Macon, Georgia a couple of days ago, and because Macon is so big, they don't train with no outside agencies. And I told them, I said, you got a 17-story building, and I said, if it's burning on the 16th floor and it's rocking and rolling, it's gonna tax your department. You're gonna have to have some outside agencies come in and help. So they realized, like, damn, because they're the bigger department, they kind of look at the surrounding areas as, kind of write them off. I said, but when it hits the fan, you're going to need those guys. So why not automatically start training with them? Because the threads of the couplings of the on the hydrants, the way it's set up and making, no outside agency will be able to connect to their plugs.
Oh, wow.
Right. So that's a problem, let alone, like, even if they come in, they can't connect to help with the water supply. So that's one issue. And then you don't train with them because you feel like they're smaller departments. Like, it's some squared away guys everywhere. You got some non-squared away guys. It's some guys at FDNY, they probably sorry as hell. And then you got some guys at FDNY, they squared away. So the size of the department don't really mean that everybody's squared away, but I think that's the mindset, that somebody from Porcupine County is not as good as somebody from, Atlanta or whatever, or DeKalb or Chicago. So I think it's good. It's very important and vital. And that's kind of one of the things that I would do if I was in that upper management role, is I will make sure that our guys train. If your county touches my county, or we touch each other, we're going to train together in some form or fashion, you know?
I mean, I think it's only right, what's with the mutual aid degree agreements.
Right.
With if you have a department that's near your border, it's only a matter of time for something to happen just right at that border
Yep.
that's going to require a response in, or hey, we need some help. Can you send us the next department? You know what I mean? Like, it's got to be a hand in hand thing. And I think it's pretty
Yep.
crazy in 2024. We actually still have, I have actually read articles of departments passing other departments that are sitting on the apron watching a column of smoke, and they don't go because they're not dispatched or said department does not want their help. Like, that's pretty crazy to me.
Yeah, it is, man. It is. And I told him, I said, even if you don't trust their training to go help you fight that high rise, could they not help with holes? Could they not give you guys water? Like, can you not use their bodies for something? And then it made them think, like, damn, because they're thinking that, okay, we don't want to bring them in and bring them to this high rise operation. Because I get it. If you in a county or town where all you got is single story trailers, going straight to fighting a high rise fire could be overwhelming. Not saying you're a bad firefighter, it's just like, it's almost like low risk, high risk, low, that concept of that highway state trooper that gave, that they're not bad firefighters, it's just the risk of it, them fighting a high-rise fire, is extremely low because the highest building they got is only two stories. So, but could you not use those firefighters for something, even if it's having, changing your cylinder out? That's an extra body that you don't have to use from your department, So it made them think outside the box and realize, like, man, we might better start, working with these surrounding counties. So, yeah, brother.
Okay. All right. You mentioned you're a truck guy, written firefighter survival. What other for an individual listening that, let's just say their company or their crew, they don't train as much as they should. What things, because you mentioned, you would sit in the bay sometimes and tie knots. What other ideas would you give to an individual who's kind of in that position?
That the company that he's in or she's in don't do any training as much, or
Yeah. They're not they're not as engaged as as he or she feels like they should. So sometimes they find themselves, well, what can I go out and do by myself without any help? Because sometimes they feel like they
Okay.
might not want to interrupt them on the couch or whatever the case.
Right. Well, I mean, it's always something. I would say learning the truck or the apparatus that they on, go to each compartment and, look and memorize, okay, what's in here? Call it out to yourself or write it down and then open it up and be like, okay, bam. Because that's crucial, because it's nothing like being on the scene and you see a firefighter opening up a bunch of compartments. That's showing one or two, either they just came to that company and they didn't do a look over that morning, or they have no clue where this equipment is, so they're just trying to wing it and open up a bunch of compartments. So that's something they can do. Make sure they square it away and understand where everything is in the compartment. SCBA, you can't put that thing on, take it off enough. You could be sitting in the bay, lay in different positions and figure out how to come out of your air pack. If you got wire cutters, practice being able to get to your wire cutters, pull them out with just one hand and simulate cutting yourself out of wires. Like, it's countless of things that you can do that really just deals with yourself. You don't really need like others if they don't want to participate. Like, you can do some self-survival stuff or self-learning. Get your map out. Go over looking at maps, finding out where the streets are. So when you start driving, okay, there's a hydrant right there at fifth and sixth. If I have to go and I'll catch that. Like, so man, it's so much to do that, you really don't, you can be in your own little world, it would be great if we all could get in the bay and do some training together, but if not, you can do your own SCBA training, making sure you understand and learn that truck, and then doing some territory study.
Okay. All right. Love it. Next topic, big topic. Firefighter fitness. I think it's one of those topics that it definitely it's starting to pick up in with social media in 2024 and the past couple of years, but we still have firefighters out there that look at it as, oh, I'm not really, and I understand everyone's different. Some people don't like to run. Some people don't like CrossFit, but I truly believe physical fitness is the foundation that's going to set you up for either success or failure. And if you're on a department where, well, we just don't have that kind of fire or that type of fire, just give it a little bit. That fire's coming. It's coming. And so my question to you is, how important and how big is firefighter fitness for you?
Man, I'm not sure if you're familiar with, there's a company out there called O2X, and I work part-time for them, and what we do is we travel around and we teach different public safety the importance of being tactical athletes. My component in thought process of that, man, is in smaller counties, I always tell them this. In a smaller department, you have to be that much more squared away physically because you don't have the manpower and the staffing. You don't have six, eight, 10, 15 guys on the scene. If a writ happens and a firefighter go down, you got to be that much more squared away because next company that comes in may be 20 minutes away. So for a smaller department, physical fitness needs to be really heightened. And I think what has happened is, like you said, it ain't gonna happen, or it's, we don't really get them type of calls. And it's sad that we've looked at that as the fire service, because I rode by one department and a guy was getting off the fire truck smoking, literally stepping down from out the yeah. And I kind of shook my head and I said, well, I can't be mad at him if that's the culture of that fire department and they have breeded that and they allowed that. I remember I used to, when I was in the fire service, I used to train a lot of my gear. And I remember the guys used to pick at me and, what you doing that for? That ain't gonna make you no better firefighter. And then years later, after studies started coming out, I remember seeing this one guy who said that. Now I look at some videos and now he's training in his gear, it took him some time to catch up and realize, but I was thinking to myself, like, that's what I've been trying to tell y'all. So I think when you look at firefighter fitness, man, it definitely, and like you said, man, I always tell people, you don't have to have a six pack. You don't have to have muscles in your ear. Just be in the best shape for you, whatever that looks like. You don't have to you do any running, because as they say, we don't run on the fire ground. There's so many, many different ways that you can get your cardio up without taking 10 steps, you know, being running, in other words. So I think, man, when it comes to fitness, man, that was one of my things that I'm real a stickler on, man. That's why I try to, you know, lead by example. Even now, you know, I'm 49 years old, man, but I still, you know, I was today, matter of fact, these guys, you know, they did the Murph with the gear on and the air pack. Hats off to them. You know, I had my helmet on and gear, and I didn't even know they were doing it with air packs. But to work out with those young brothers, you know, keeps me motivated, keeps me driving, you know, because I feel like, you know, hey, I'm still, you know, I'm still doing it. Even not even being in the fire service, I still train like a firefighter. But, man, I think, man, to just sum it up, there's not even enough words that I can say and speak on firefighter fitness, man. I just think that as a whole, we got to start looking at this different. Once again, it comes back to why. And I always tell people this, even if you don't want to work out for the citizens, even if you could give a damn about your citizens, work out for yourself, work out for your daughter, work out for, once again, being able to get home to them. If you don't give a damn about the citizens that you work for and that pays you, have an understanding of I'm working out and being able to be in physically shape, good physical shape for my family. Because people think that if you would take it away from firefighting and think about, okay, the better shape I'm in, the better my lungs are, then I might not get, you know, I might not have any problems with, you know, getting COPD or whatever. The better shape I am, the better or my heart condition is. I don't have to maybe possibly worry about having no heart attacks. So even if you strip away firefighting and think about, let me be in better shape because I don't want all these ailments, that might give them the incentive to want to work out, you know. So I just think that we got to figure out how to look at this physical fitness and not tied in to firefighting so much, because what if you're at a department where you only, I don't know, run 2 structure fires a month? Does that mean that you're still going to be, you know, half-assed, excuse my language, with your fitness? You know, so it's just so much I can say when it comes to that, man. And that's why I still try to lead by example, you know. So no young guy can say, well, Mims, you just talking. No, Mims still train. Mims still breathe air. Mims still do obstacle course. And I'm not in the fire service. So that's how big I take, you know, fitness to still train like that and not being in it. So hopefully somebody sees me and be like, wait a minute, Mims ain't even a firefighter. He trained like this. Let me get my stuff together and, you know, start training. So yeah, man, I'm a big stickler of fitness, man. I just can't say enough of the importance of that. And I think what hurts us too is when you got older guys in the fire service that's been on a job for 20 something years and they may have never worked out, but they've gotten by. And then these younger guys come on, they did it in recruit setting, you know, where it was mandatory. Now they get to these companies where the guys are not working out because they feel like, oh, you don't need that to fight fire. That hurts us too, you know. We just got to try to figure out how to change that narrative, man. You know,
big facts, big facts. And what you said, I saw the image pop up in my head. One of the social media pages I follow says, you shouldn't come out of recruit school in the best shape of your life and stop there. Like, recruit school shouldn't keep you physically fit. Once you leave recruit school, you need to continue that. And sadly, you're 100% accurate. That occurs where the best shape of your life was when you were in recruit class. And once you get on the streets and you get surrounded by individuals who just, oh, well, we don't run, you know, this isn't recruit class. Like, we need to continue that trend. And another hit that you put out there was, if your department isn't big, if your department is small, and when you get a call, it's just a select few of, you know, individuals that are going to be on that scene, you are required to do the how many tasks as like a big city fire department. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's astounding that we have people that don't see it that way. But then the biggest factor, and I know individuals like this, everybody has somebody that loves them, that wants them alive. Even if you're not married, if you don't have kids, there's somebody that wants, that continues to talk to you, that wants you to come home. And if you can't put that factor in of, you know what, the organization is paying me, they allow us an hour a day to at least go out and do something, why not do something?
Right.
Like, I could never fathom that. I really can't. I can't, because it's, you know, we are looked at, especially in this day and age, you know, where the police are looked at a little differently. Firefighters still have America's trust. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, there's an issue going on. They call 911. Firefighters show up. Walking, you know, I've walked into countless homes where they're like, "He's over here. She's over here." They allow you to come in. These are the people that are counting on us, and your investment back to them is, yeah, it was hot today. I didn't want to do anything, so I'm not going to. But I'm gonna eat these bag of
Right.
chips here. And like I said, man, there's give and take. I'm not saying you can't enjoy some ice cream because firefighters. When it's hot out, hey, let's go run to the
Right.
ice cream store. I get that, but you gotta put in the work to reap the rewards or receive the reward. You know what I'm saying?
No, you're right. I agree,
It's
brother.
crazy. Like
I agree.
fitness needs to be a priority. And you know, some departments out there, training is priority, which training should be, you know, response times. But whenever it comes to fitness, it's kind of like that gray area where they're like, we don't really want to talk about this individual. You know, it's like
Oh, yeah.
the military doesn't do that. I'm not a military person, but I'm pretty sure the military has fitness standards.
And they don't sway at all either,
That's
you
what I'm
know?
saying. It's crazy. Like, I just don't understand how we continue to go that trend of, well, we know that there's an issue with said individual. We're just not going to say anything until, God forbid, that person gets posted on Billie G secret list. How many times do we see firefighters respond to a call, go to bed, nobody knows where they are, found dead in their bunk room?
Yeah, man.
Like,
Yep.
I just don't get it. I don't get it. But you mentioned that company you work for. It sounds pretty interesting. So what do you guys do, and how can people find out more information if they wanted to go there? Because we also have people that don't, they want to do something, but they just don't know what to do.
I got you. So O2X, you can type in O2X.com, is an organization that was started by two Navy SEALs. And what we do is we travel around the country to agencies, whether it be police, fire, EMS, and based on what their needs are, like we got injury prevention, we have sleep workshops, like, you know, because firefighters or law enforcement sometimes have a problem with sleeping. So we give mechanisms and ways on how you can control your sleep. We have a breathing workshop. We have a conditioning workshop. So what we do is we come in and give you methods of ways to train on duty where you're not, you know, taxing yourself. Injury prevention, like stretching and yoga and different things to kind of lessen those injuries or even prevent them. And it's a good company, man, you know, and I'm not trying to sell them on this platform, but I just think that that's something that agencies need to look at, you know, with them coming in and giving them some type of platform. Because, like you said, a lot of people want to do something, but don't know, you know, what to do or how to do. That's kind of like where the personal trainer thing comes in, is, you know, somebody that can kind of guide you on what to do. Because I hear that all the time. You know, people say, you know, I don't mind working out, I just don't know what to do. You know, that's why I need a personal trainer. And I get it. But for me, at the end of the day, you still, even with having a personal trainer, like you still got to want it. You know, you still have to have some type of why and you got to want it. But then the personal trainer should be like a stepping stone to, if that's what you need to get you going, where you to the point where you don't need a personal trainer no more. You've built that why, you know? So yeah, definitely. Like I said, O2X.com, people can look it up. They have platform, different exercises that you can pull off of there. They got exercises you can do in your gear. It's a great thing, man. You know, it really is.
Okay. All right. Because you know, like I said, I think there needs to be, and you know, there's a plethora of individuals in the fire service that have either a gym on the side, or they're personal trainers, or they have workouts for people to do. And I get it, you know,
Right.
like people need to find what works for them. And sometimes personal trainers work for them, CrossFit, running, ultra
Right.
marathons, whatever the case may be. We all just need to find something. Like, my whole thing about it is, if you're gonna work out, you have to sweat.
Yeah.
I don't know any workout that isn't a workout if you don't sweat. Like, to me, you have to sweat. That's the whole point of a workout.
Right.
Get that heart rate up, get that perfusion going, get you hot, especially if you do gear workouts, man. Gear workouts are the almighty equalizer. You're mimicking that when you're in the fire ground, on the fire ground. It's hot out there, man. You want to shell off, shell off that coat, but you got to keep it on because that builds endurance.
Yeah.
Me and my wife argue all the time how you mentioned personal trainers. Personal trainers to me, yes, should be there for a little bit, but once you get to that mindset and level, it's, hey, I appreciate the year, year's up. I'm going to continue this on my own and continue it.
Right.
And like I said, I know
I agree.
everyone's different. Everybody has their own thing, but you need to find what works for the person. And I appreciate you talking about that company. And no, this isn't like a, I'm not trying to have you sales pitch or whatnot, but people need
I
to
got you.
know there are other options out there, for
Right.
them.
I got you. I appreciate that.
No, no problem. No problem. Let's hit on wellness and truly being there for one another. The fire service is a brotherhood, and yes, you're no longer in the fire service, but you still know plenty of individuals that are. So, the term brotherhood gets thrown around a lot,
Yeah.
and unfortunately we have we've had so many individuals within emergency services and take their life. And it doesn't even have to be emergency services. Yesterday, I was working at my fire station, and ESPN talked about the golfer that was struggling through mental health and took his life at the age of 30. So,
Man.
like, how big, and I hate that. I love the word brotherhood, but I hate individuals that use it to the point where it's kind of like you're just using it because it's a buzzword.
Right, yeah.
So, how important is that for you?
I think when I was in the fire service, it wasn't looked at, we want to have this tough guy, macho image, which, the mental health wellness, the wellness rolls into the physical fitness of things of not wanting to get physicals, because we got this tough guy image. So, and I'm glad a lot of agencies have it in place that yearly you're gonna do a physical, whether it's 1582 or whatever it is, we're gonna make you do it because us as men, sometimes we, like I said, we have this image that we don't want to, tell anybody, and men don't cry and all that crap. So I think that rolls over into the wellness and mental health of aspect of things. I will say that I think the fire service is getting better from what I see with having mental health wellness workshops come in, or having a place where somebody can have that outlet and nobody in the department knows, they can talk and be in confidence. So I think we are getting better with that. And the stuff we see, man, as man, we see some stuff that the average human being is not going to see. And different people deal with it differently. For me, when I was married, the only time my wife knew that something happened, if they put it on the news. We could have a big fire. I mean, we could have a 800 story building burn up. I wouldn't bring it home. She would never know unless she, seen it on TV, because I wanted to keep that separate. But I think what we do, or do have done in the fire service is we compartmentalize things. We see a call and somebody's, messed up real bad, and we push it to the side, wherever we push that in our brain, and then we go on to the next one, but at some point, being able to talk about those things and not have a stigma of worrying about what people are gonna say, we got to get away from, man. So I definitely think it's important. To me, it's probably, I would have to put it up there right there with physical fitness, man, because they kind of intertwine with each other, so I think it definitely needs to be looked at different in this day and time. I want to say the bigger departments may have it, they may have their stuff together when it comes with, because they got the bigger the department, the bigger the budget to implement those things, So I think a lot of big departments are doing, are striving towards doing better at that topic. But the smaller agencies need it as well, and they got to figure out methods of how to implement some type of mental health wellness, workshop or something. Despite not having that huge budget, but I do think we need to look at it different and shed that macho image of not wanting to talk about things, you know?
Yeah, definitely, definitely, definitely. And the whole men don't cry, like you said, back when I was being taught things in the fire service, it was they never really taught, like it was like, man, that was a bad call. Sure was. All right, so what are we doing next? You know what I mean? Like it was
Yeah,
we
yeah.
never really sat down. Like I know for me, when I was young in the fire service and we ran a bad call, like nobody really came up to me. It was just like, hey, you good? Yeah. And it was like, all right, cool. And that was it. You know,
Yeah.
now, we have CISD, we have companies that
Yeah.
can come in, we have chaplains, clinicians, all that good stuff. But I like how you mentioned how wellness and physical fitness should go hand in hand. Like, I know if I
Yeah.
have a bad day at work, when I work out, that's when I throw it all in the workout and leave it there when I'm done. You know what I mean? Like, that's just what I do. You know what I'm
Your coping
saying? But
mechanism,
that's my coping
maybe.
mechanism. Yep, perfect. I get all my frustrations out, or I go for a long run and just purge all that stuff out. And if sometimes I have to talk about it, I have people I can call that are also in the fire service. I go, hey man, you got time to talk real quick? I had a bad call. And they're like, all right. And all they do is listen. And then when I'm
That's
done, they're
good.
like, you want me to talk? I'm like, yeah. And then we just talk. I think we all need to find that person. And if you are around individuals who look at it as, oh man, toughen up, like that's some bitch shit. Like those are the individuals you need to stay away from.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Last topic, communication amongst the ranks. And hopefully with what you do, you're able to go around and see different departments, various sizes of organizations. So would you say, at least for me, I know the top companies or top departments in the country, their communication is paramount. It's top down, down up, like they talk to one another. What's your take on
Right.
communication?
I think that's what allows the department to flow well, is when there is it's not a us against them, you know, the administration is separate, you know, when you have that communication and be upfront with people, not hide things, it just makes for a better organization, you know, when, like you said, from the top down, bottom up. And I'm not saying that, you know, the chief needs to go around and talk with every guy, you know, like might not be able to do that, but at least there's some form of communication where that can be done. Now, if you got a small apartment, you got 90 guys, I think that it's important that you, as a chief, you might want to talk to all of them. You may want to go to the stations, and because that's something feasible to do. But I do think communication is definitely important. And I would see, I think overall, because I'm responsible for our search and rescue teams here in Georgia, kind of like the USAR team. And from what I see, I think communication definitely is important in that role. But I do see that it's done well. I think we're getting better at it, you know, because we're understanding the importance of communication, being transparent. You know, that's one of the things I pride myself on, is that I don't lie to the guys. You know, if it's something that I can do, I'm gonna say, all right, we're gonna make it happen. But if it's not, I'm saying, hey man, I don't think we're gonna be able to do that. You know, I'm pretty transparent. You know, if they ask me, say, hey, look, I'm gonna put in for this hundred something thousand dollar grant. You think the state gonna approve it? I say, I'm gonna be honest. I said, probably not, because you gotta look at, we gotta support nine other USAR teams. So you getting that hundred something thousand dollars is gonna be kind of hard for just one agency. So what I'm getting at is that I'm transparent, my communication is open. So it allows them to look at me. I have that respect, because I don't try to, I keep it clear. You know, if I get something from the governor, I pass it down to them guys, you know. So I think communication is getting better within the fire service, especially since I got in, or from the time I got in till I got out. And I think it's very important that it does flow, as you mentioned, you know.
Okay. All right. And love the answer, because to me it's all about, and you said it, the key word to me is transparency. As firefighters, we all need to know that there are certain things a chief or captain or whatever can't say when it comes to like personnel, things of that nature. But
Right.
when it comes to the daily operations of the department, I think the chief or whoever's in charge should share what their goals are, ask for input from the men and women, like, hey, where would you like to see us go? Blah, 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 and go from there. But like we have to communicate. Communication is paramount.
Right.
Last personal question for you, and I always ask the guests, where would you like to see yourself in a couple years in the future? Do you see yourself as trying to go for a chief or what?
Yeah, probably. I always tell myself, like, if I go back to the fire service, I would have to go in as a fire chief or maybe a deputy chief or something. So I could see myself, in a couple of years, opportunity presents itself being a fire chief, maybe at a small department. I'm using that as a platform to kind of get my feet wet and, learn more about that chief position and then maybe rolling on to a bigger department. So,
Okay.
yeah, I can see that.
All right. Fantastic. Fantastic. Ollie, I truly appreciate you coming on, taking the time to do this. This was really good insight talk. Yeah, this was I honestly have to say, like, I really love your insight on it. And even though you're not fully invested in the fire service, but you still partake and do things with the guys until you find yourself transitioning back. Like, you pretty much have never forgotten what it's like.
Yeah, I agree. I appreciate it. You're right.
And I gotta throw a shout out to Ian Schulte. Ian was the reason why we got in contact. Ian texted me. He's like, "Hey man, I got a guy for you," and I'm like, "All ears." And he was like, "Contact this
Yeah,
dude." So Ian thinks
Ian.
very highly of you, pal.
Yeah, I know. I think he put me too far up, man. I appreciate it. It's definitely warrant, man, because at the end of the day, I always look at it like this, man. When you pass away, you got that birth date and you got the end date, man. And whatever you did in between that, man, that's what you're gonna be remembered by, man. So hopefully, I've made some type of impact, with Ian and others or within the fire service, man, that I'm remembered, and they still talk about me when I'm gone, man. So that's the goal.
I love it. I love it. I think that's how we all should think. You know, we have a born date, we have that end date. What we do in between those is pretty much what our legacy will be, what our last name will be remembered as. And I know for me personally, I don't want to be labeled like a shit bag, a bad dude. I want people to go like, man, he cared about the job, he cared about his family, whatever the case may be. Like, he was a good human being. So I just want to say thanks for coming on, man. I truly appreciate it.
And it was an honor to be a part of this podcast, man. I actually never done a podcast or no type of interview like this before, where there's a question and answers, and I could kind of freelance how I speak. So, hats off to you for having this, man, and inviting me on, man. And definitely keep rocking and rolling, man, and keep up the good work with what you're doing, brother. It's definitely appreciated, man.
I appreciate you. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.